Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're in the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 with the
Priest,
the Pom,
and the Poof.
This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
Good evening and welcome to Spirit Lounge. And unfortunately, the Pom is not able to be with us because she has had to go back to Scotland.
Instead, you've got the pornographer.
Well, I was wondering what P you would come up with. Yes, we have, and you probably hear that voice all the time. The gorgeous Dean, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's an honour to be invited onto this show. I'm really pleased to be here. Thank you very much.
You can pay us later.
I will indeed.
Now, apparently the SMS and email, you can send them to 0427JOY949 if you want to join in our conversation, or 1300JOY949, or on air at joy.org.au, and Gordon will run into the studio.
We haven't told him that yet, but he will do that.
He's listening. Yes, he's waving. Right. Yes, he's nodding. Yes, he's got his running shoes on and he's going to come in. So, Dean, seeing you're the guest presenter, you can tell us what's on tonight.
Well, tonight we have a very special guest. He is the author of a book that is all about bringing us together with the GLBTI community, together with the churches. And his name is Andrew Marin, and he's joining us to discuss his desire to see a conversation begin between various denominations of churches, including the evangelical far right, as we perhaps might term them in this country, and the GLBTI community. There's a lack of discourse that has occurred over the years, and he is here to encourage that.
And then we're going to actually talk to Dr. Stuart Edser, who wrote a book called Being Gay and Being Christian. So he wrote this book a while ago, but it's about to be launched. I don't quite get that, but that's all right.
Well, these things take time.
We'll have to grill him on that when we've got him on the phone.
Yeah, why did it take that long?
So shall we begin?
Well, shall we start with our first guest?
I think we should.
All right. Our first guest tonight is an author and the president and founder of the Marin Foundation. He describes himself as straight, white, conservative, Bible-believing, evangelical, and we might add, he's an American male. He's here to talk about his book, Love is an Orientation, Elevating the Conversation with the Gay Community. His name is Andrew Marin, and we welcome him to the Spirit Lounge. Welcome.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
How's your trip here in Australia been thus far? I believe you've been touring the country, trying to encourage us to have the conversation.
Yeah, it's been great. You know, it's a lot different from back home in the States. I would say the biggest thing that I've noticed thus far is Australians are much more interested in the common good than Americans.
What do you mean by that?
Well, Australians seem to care about what other Australians think and feel and how their lives are, and they're a lot more how I would term bridge builders, which means...
Do you mean they're more community and less individual?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And it's less... you know, in the States, so politically speaking, let's say, you know, we have Republicans and Democrats as the two major majority political parties. And what would happen in the States is someone would say I'm a Democrat or someone would say I'm a Republican, and whoever is not the other group, there's an automatic enemy. There's an automatic vilification of, I know who you are and what you believe and how I should treat you solely based on one word. And
with that comes all of the prejudices associated with it, whatever side of the fence you're on, surely.
Oh, yeah. Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And so that's why for us, I mean, Australia obviously being a Western society and in the developed world, and we've spent a lot of time in the UK over the years, and so I had just generally thought, okay, well, Australia, and from the Australians that I know in the States, I was like, oh, it's probably going to be pretty similar to back home, and it is it has been such a wonderful, pleasant surprise on how not similar in many of these political and religious areas that it has been.
We certainly are probably a little more relaxed and laid back than the Americans, would you think?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and this is going to be an extreme generalization, but, you know, everyone's very hyper back home, hyper about anything. And if you care about something, you love that thing to death, and that is all that you care about. And if you don't like something, you hate that thing more than you hate anything on the face of the earth.
We just couldn't give a shit.
Yeah, right? And there is definite poignancy to that. And it's something that I feel that that we need to really work on back home, but it's been a great month or a couple of weeks thus far.
Now that's a good lead into actually talking about your book, because for the first 19 years of your life, you admit you were homophobic.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know why, but that's right. The way you were.
Yeah.
What happened to change you?
Yeah. Well, the town that I grew up in outside of the city of Chicago, very very conservative town. I went to a large Pentecostal mega church, and there were no gay and lesbian kids at my high school, at least none that were out. There was no Gay Straight Alliance, and there were 4,000 kids at my high school. And on top of that, I was the first kid from my high school to get a full athletic scholarship to play baseball in university. And so I'm coming from that sport mentality, very alpha male, very conservative, very homophobic. I mean, everything out of my mouth was fag or gay. Listen, at the end of the day, there were, and I'm not self-justifying, but there were no checks and balances for me, because as a white straight male, I was just automatically at the top of the cultural hierarchy chain, and there's power and there's privilege afforded with that that I didn't realize that I was even participating in.
You had a bloody big wake-up call, though, when all of your friends around you started coming out.
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly, exactly. So the summer after my first year of university, my three best friends all came out to me in three consecutive months, and it shattered everything that I had ever known about what is normal and who is
these,
normal.
These were really intimate friends. These were your closest friends.
Yes, yes. We hung out every day together for 12 years. In fact, the third of my best friends who came out to me, we grew up a couple houses down from each other. We were best friends since we were 7 years old, grade two.
And, how did that make you feel then?
Oh, it was, I felt, because I internalized it. At that moment, I could have cared less what they were feeling, because it was all about me at this point. It was all about, well, how am I going to wrap my mind around this? How am I going to relate to them? How am I going to do all this stuff? And I'll be really honest with you. It wasn't until I felt the Lord very clearly say to me, Andrew, instead of asking all of these questions and going all these places, why don't you ask yourself and start here? What was it like for your best friends to know that if they were to ever come out to you and tell you who they are, that you would do exactly what you just did, which is stick your tail between your legs and cut ties with them and run away like a scared little 5-year-old. And I didn't know how to handle that. And
did it make you at all question your sexuality?
No. I've never had a same-sex attraction. I know that I'm straight, just like people in the LGBT community know that they're gay. And so it's just one of those inherent things that we all know. And I did think it was odd that the three closest people to me all identify as lesbian and gay. However, for me, it was never, I never thought twice about it.
In acknowledging that state of what is, knowing that you're straight, knowing that they are gay, tell me your thoughts on trying to make people straight.
Oh, well, I, you know, there has been so much damage and there's been so much harm. And here's the unfortunate part. I would have been in that camp before my best friends came out to me. I would have said, well, it's a choice and they can change and they just need to go to these ex-gay programs. And what happened when I moved into Boys Town, which is the gay neighborhood of Chicago, with my two lesbian best friends, what happened is that I started seeing everywhere around me how much damage that people like me caused the LGBT community.
So you acknowledged that the ex-gay movement is destroying lives, not creating lives.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And even the people, here's the thing, even the people that I know today who would say that they are quote-unquote ex-gay and they are married to people of the opposite
they're
sex.
They're cured.
Which is a very, very small number of people. When they're being honest with you, they would say, listen, I'm not straight. They know they're not straight, but they're trying to live into the ideal of what their religious belief system dictates is best for them. So no, I have not met anybody who has ever said, I was gay and now I'm straight.
Yet in your book, you quote something like 67% success rate for ex-gay organizations, and you actually never seem to say that they do damage. In your book, is there a reason why?
It's almost as if you're putting it forward as something that is worth pursuing if people want to change.
No, I didn't say in the book that 67% there was any.
That's
67.
What they said.
That's you, what you quoted, they said.
Yeah, but you didn't also go on to say what damage they're doing.
Well, I believe I did. I believe that in the book I told quite a few stories about people who have gone through ex-gay programs and how it not only has not worked, but it does cause a lot of damage. One particular story that is coming to my mind on page 69, I tell a story about Tim and, you know, Tim's story involves ex-gay work and how much, A, that didn't happen, how much shame, internal homophobia that really brought out in him. And and how he moved forward then as an out gay man. And I understand what you're referencing there, but holistically looking at the book, it definitely speaks against
our guest is thinking. Andrew Marin. He's the founder of the Marin Foundation. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about his book, Love is an Orientation. Right after this, you are listening to The Spirit Lounge with the priest, the poof, and the pornographer here on Joy 94.9.
Joy.
Joy.
94.9.
And you're on Spirit Lounge with Dean, Joy, and Andrew. And our special guest tonight is Andrew Marin, who is author of Love is an Orientation. Andrew, that was a track that you chose. Tell us what it was and why.
That was Leah Michelle from Glee, who plays Rachel Berry. And number one, I love Glee. And I could literally listen to Rachel Berry or Leah Michelle sing 24 hours a day. But I just love it for the fact of it's about strength in love, and it's about perseverance in love, and love doesn't give up. It's people who give up, and if we understand that that love doesn't give up, then we can be on a path to working more towards that. So it's just something that has spoken to me since I first heard it.
Andrew, the evangelical church, let's not pussyfoot around, it expresses absolute hatred towards our community. How are you met by them in trying to bridge that gap? Do they just write you off, or because you're part of their flock? How is it that they listen to you advocating on behalf of the GLBTI community?
Yeah, I get my fair share of hate mail from them. The whole you're going to end up in hell with
those the rest of them
dirty, rotten homosexuals. That's a common thing that we get. But at the end of the day, my neighborhood where I live in Boys Town, and 89% of the people that live in Boys Town identify as LGBT, and we have fantastic We've done really amazing things together, both in the neighborhood as well as in Chicago, as well as, you know, in a lot of different churches and in the city at large. And so I wouldn't say necessarily that all of the evangelical community hates LGBT folks. That would be like generalizing that all of the gay community hates whatever it is. I don't know, you know, and obviously there are different shades of LGBT, the same as there are different shades of evangelicalism. So the best of what can happen and what we have seen happen is people ultimately being willing, and people in the evangelical world ultimately be willing to enter into a journey. Before, the message 5 years ago and before then was, you know, gay doesn't happen in our church. You know, it's this fringe little thing in society. And the message the last year and a half, 2 years has been, okay, we realize that this is not going anywhere, and now we don't know what to do. And, you know, I feel so often, and it doesn't mean we're the first people anybody calls, but we have had an opportunity to really speak into a lot of these spaces.
Do churches seek you out to try and help them gain an understanding because you have, I guess, a connection to both communities? Mm-hmm. Is that what is more often occurring?
Yeah, we used to actually work with churches a lot more than we do recently. I mean, recently it's been a lot of universities. And
why universities?
Well, they have these problems on campuses as well. So there are Christian universities, there are state school, you know, large research institutions that have no faith and in their, you know, in their core. And so what happens is we get called by Christian universities and they'll say, oh man, we have gay kids on campus and
what do we do?
We don't know what to do with them. And then you have the state schools, the large research institutions, they call us and they go, oh man, we got these Christian kids on campus and we don't know what to do with them. And so ultimately, you know, what we're trying to do with our bridge building work is to facilitate a new medium of engagement between both communities. And that cannot happen unless both communities are present.
Do you feel like you're sort of sitting on a fence, though, and you're being pulled in two different directions at times? And, you know, you've got the GLBT community wanting you to side with them, and you've got the evangelical church that want you to side with them. Is that how you feel at times?
Oh yeah. You know, we in the foundation get pulled in two very clear directions every day. I think the unique thing, so on staff there's seven of us, and three of us are straight.
How do you fund seven people to exist?
Just individual donations, and then also our staff members have to raise their own support. So and we're all broke. so that helps a lot too.
He was serving drinks on the plane out here.
Yeah. We hustle is a love language. So, but there's the three of us are straight, two of us are lesbian, one of us is gay, and then one of us is in a mixed orientation marriage. And so all of us, all seven of us, have people in our own communities, have people in the deemed other community pulling each of us in two different ways. But we're all committed to understanding that culture cannot sustainably progress and move forward unless we bring everybody together to figure out how to move forward, even amongst or within competing worldviews.
Many religions are starting to express, I guess, an understanding of homosexuality by saying, you're allowed to be gay as long as you don't have sex. Mm-hmm. Celibacy is the option if you are gay. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, what people miss is that no is a legitimate option. And it doesn't matter if a religion or a denomination has a more progressive theological view. It doesn't matter if they have a more conservative theological view.
Hang on,
view.
When was no an option? I mean, even the Catholic Church has proven that celibacy is a failed experiment by any recollection.
No. I'm saying
when
no.
When is no to sex an option?
No. I'm not saying that. I'm saying when people say no to celibacy, that I'm talking from a conservative church perspective. So if a conservative church says, and could be any evangelical, Jewish, you know, Muslim, whatever, and they can say, well, you can be gay, but you cannot have sex. And then someone, an LGBT person, then says, no, I was born not only this way, but to be a spiritual being and a sexual being and this or that. So what I'm saying in relation to no is specifically for those conservative faith communities, that no is a legitimate option. And that's what they have been missing, because they think that because the thought process is my baseline and my inherent social, moral, ethical worldview is better than yours. And therefore, if you don't align with my worldview, if you have a different one, then you're bad or you're wrong or you're sinning or you're whatever variable you want to label or whatever name you want to call it. And but that's just not how society works. We live in a pluralistic, postmodern culture where, broadly speaking, outside of the global South, most of the world is not inherently faith-based. And so you have a lot of these faith traditions still working off the understanding, no, I am right, I am in the dominant majority, and everyone who doesn't agree with me is wrong and bad and all this type of stuff. And so what we're trying to help them understand is no is a legitimate option, no to your belief, no to your views, no to your worldview, whatever that situation is.
No to your sexuality. Conversely.
What do you mean?
Well, the churches can say, well, no to you, you're gay, get out.
Right. And
which they often do.
And that's what we're trying to change. So, yeah.
But does it that... are you having much success, can I say, with that point of view of getting churches to accept?
To accept no.
Yeah. To accept that, okay, I want to be a part of your church. I mean, I myself was thrown out of an evangelical church because I went along and I said, I'm a lesbian. And they said, that's fine. But of course, eventually
you can't act on it.
No, you can't be practiced. And I said, well, I'm already really good at it, so I don't need to practice. So it is a problem, isn't it, where people get incredibly hurt.
Yes.
People in our community, to the point where they end their lives because of it.
And it's beyond hurt. It is ostracized. It is their entire world shattered before their eyes for simply being themselves and not being accepted for who and what they are.
And to be, I mean, often they're made to feel guilty for who they are.
Yeah, they're then made to stand out and pointed at and shunned and made an example of for others.
Mm-hmm.
It is appalling behavior by organizations that profess love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and love, as the Bible says, wisdom will be proven right by her actions. And Jesus said that. And ultimately, people can say love, and they can say, you're welcome. Are you welcome, or are you welcome to the back row? You know, that's the key difference that people don't extrapolate on. And so, ultimately, to get back to your original question, is that yes, we are seeing a lot of movement. We are seeing a lot of change. We are seeing a lot of people, both in the conservative, social, theological, political world, at least starting to engage, which they have never previously done to this point. And we have also seen a lot of folks in the LGBT community willing to also start to engage. We're not trying to put any LGBT people in conservative churches where they're going to be harmed and things like that. But once again, as you guys know, if you do not humanize something, it is so much easier for another group to just look at you as a unemotional enemy that needs to be beaten down, that needs to be won.
If we're not humanized, we can easily be demonized.
Right, exactly. So what we also need are people in the LGBT community, and this obviously starts on staff with us, our gay and lesbian members, who are willing to engage in these conversations with, ultimately, we are all very acutely aware with the entity that has caused them a lot of harm in their life.
Andrew Marin is the founder of the Marin Foundation, author of the book Love is an Orientation. Thank you for joining us on the Spirit Lounge this evening. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You are with the priest, the pom, and the pornographer. This is Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
And you're on Spirit Lounge? Oh, Dean, just wake up. Look, we played that song for a reason, Dean.
Why was that?
That's a song called For Those Tears I Died. It was written by a gorgeous woman called Marcia Stevens Pino.
Beautiful
and
voice.
And do you know what?
What?
All these evangelical Pentecostal churches sing it, and she's a lesbian.
Oh.
Hallelujah.
Happy clappers.
I just love that. I think it's that she's part of she, and she started because they didn't
Did she
like
write the song?
Fact. Yes, yeah, she wrote it.
Wow.
They didn't like the fact that she was a lesbian, so she started Balm Music, which is born again lesbian music.
Born again lesbian.
Isn't that fabulous?
I like that.
So that was Marcia Stevens Pino with "For Those Tears I Died."
It's the new denomination of the Baptist Church, the born again lesbian.
Now who are we going to attack next? Oh no, we're not going to be. We're going to be lovely, aren't we? Look, our next guest is a psychologist, author and researcher. His book, Being Gay, Being Christian, sets out to prove that it is possible to be both gay and Christian. And joining us all the way from Newcastle is our friend, Dr. Stuart Itzer. Stuart, good evening.
Hello. How are you all?
Oh, we're fabulous. What about you, darling?
Oh, look, I'm really well. I've just been listening to Andrew Marin with a box of Smarties and a cup of decaf coffee.
Is that significant in any way?
I feel great.
You needed a sugar fix after that, did you?
Oh, all's well.
We're not going to talk about Andrew Marin. You did go in here and speak, I understand, is that?
No, I haven't yet.
We weren't going to talk about him, weren't we?
Andrew's going to be in Newcastle next weekend.
Oh, okay.
So I plan to go and listen to him on Sunday afternoon. Yeah.
Great. Now, Stuart, we want to talk a little bit about your book, which sets out to prove that it is okay to be gay and be Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a bit about how you go about proving that, because you do set about in a logical way proving that it is okay.
Well, yes, I do. I think the first thing I'd like to say is that I'm really not out to convert the world to Christianity or any other kind of faith. My purpose in writing the book there were a couple of purposes, really. One of the audience folky were gay people who still had a Christian faith but who were struggling with it, or gay people who had been hurt by the church and have left the church. So that was one of my intended audience. And I wanted to just say to those people that the traditional teachings of the church are in fact wrong and need to be changed. So as I listened to the interview before with Andrew, it didn't sound to me at all like he was kind of sitting on the fence or anything like that. I could endorse just about everything he said there, and I just would probably take it one step further and say that the teachings of the church actually need to change, that they're not good enough for the 21st century.
But, Stuart, there was, I don't know whether you've heard of it, there's an international bestseller, it's called The Bible, and apparently in that book that being gay is, we should be stoned to death.
Yeah, well, a lot of people would have us believe that that's exactly what it does say. I'm with a lot of other scholars who have actually done a little bit of modern reading into this. And first of all, we would say now that there is plenty of modern scholarship in biblical studies, in theology, in linguistics, in history, in archaeology, to show that, in fact, the Bible is not talking about what we know today as a gay sexuality.
But it's the word of God, Stuart. You can't misinterpret that.
Well, anybody that says to me, the Bible clearly says, I just get a strikeout straight away. Because whenever anybody says the Bible clearly says, they really don't know their Bible, for a start. And in fact, I think there's a certain arrogance and a hubris that goes with that kind of statement.
Amen.
But I wonder, Stuart, if often in evangelical Pentecostal churches, they actually are not encouraged to study the Bible for themselves. They're told what it is, what it means. So that must affect how people actually view homosexuals. If they were encouraged to study it for themselves and they were led in studying it, then surely that would help them change.
Joy, I absolutely agree. But, I mean, I think the same about the place of women in society as well. With the traditional evangelical teachings on the place of women, and let's not forget the Catholic Church there as well. So I think I think there has been a sense for a lot of Christians that you sort of park your brain at the door as you walk into the church, and people are very, very tired of that. And are wanting something different. And I think the churches are having to respond to people more in touch with their own internal moral compass, people who are friends with and have family members who are gay people and LGBT people, women in leadership, all these sorts of things. The church has been behind the times in many, many ways. Evangelicals and Catholics alike would defend, or at least the conservative wing of those would defend that position by saying, well, this is the word of God, or this is the teaching of the church. But we do know that not everybody thinks that way, and that the church is changing. Look, you know, even evangelicalism itself is changing. It's not even in the United States, where it's main power base is, even there it is changing, and people are beginning to see that this whole idea of we've got the truth, we've got the right ideas, we're going to change the world. Well, they've been saying that for over 100 years. And the world hasn't changed.
But they're still very much based around an emotional experience often, rather than an actual intellectual experience.
Yes.
But it's also based around a disempowerment of the individual. When you tell someone what they need to know and you are the be-all and end-all in that space, the individual doesn't have to know anything other than to operate under the rule of the law as it is given to you. There's no reason for you to have an individual thought process.
Yeah, that's right. It's Dean, isn't it?
Yes, that's
right. Dean, I agree with that. In fact, I'd go further. I think it's a form of infantilization, is what psychologists would call it, where adults are actually treated like they're children.
Mm.
So you get the authoritative or authoritarian, depending on which brand of church you go to, pastor or group of elders up the top who are telling us all what to do, how to think, how to pray, how to believe, what's right, what's wrong, what's orthodox, what's not orthodox.
But that's how they control people, isn't it?
Well, it has been, but I think their days are numbered, frankly. I think the days of the church sort of offering that top-down approach to 21st century people are numbered. I think people are wanting more than that, and as I said before, people are looking to their own neighbours, to their own internal moral compass, their own reading of the scriptures, their own prayer lives, and they're not wanting to, as I said, leave their brain at the door. They want a reasonable faith, an intellectual faith that still has an emotional component with it, which makes it meaningful.
And we're talking to Dr. Stuart Edser on Spirit Lounge, and we'll be right back after these messages.
This is Joy 94.9, your gay and lesbian station.
You're listening to the Spirit Lounge here on Joy 94.9. You're with the priest, the poof and the pornographer. Our guest is Dr. Stuart Edser. He's the author of a book titled Being Gay, Being Christian. Stuart, I'd like to know what your thoughts are with regards to the Catholic Church. They've elected a new pope, but they are in the thick of it big time. Not just here, but around the world at the moment. And the damage that they have done is, to say the very least, unchristian.
Yes. Look, where does one start with the Catholic Church? They are really in a real mess. The election of the new Pope brings great promise, but does it bring great promise for the LGBT community? That's the big question, I guess, on all our hearts tonight as we talk about that in terms of our community. You know, Pope Francis has said some fairly strong pronouncements when he was a cardinal in Buenos Aires against us. I wonder whether we give him the benefit of some time now that he's assumed the papacy to maybe effect some change, if that's the way he wants to. He certainly does want to in terms of being a less, I guess, ostentatious and pompous church. He wants to be more a pope of the poor. Jesus hung out with the poor people and the marginalised, and this is the way Francis is talking. It's interesting, though, you know, we LGBT people, I think, are in a sense, you know, there's only, you know, 3 to 5% of us. So, you know, we are in a sense the marginalised from the major heterosexual community in terms of numbers. So, I think if Jesus were around today, he'd be hanging out with the gays, because that's the kind of people that Jesus was with. He wasn't with the power people, he wasn't with the politicians, and he certainly wasn't with the religious elite. He's with the people.
In fact, I would go as far as to say that's why he was crucified, because he actually stood up to the religious leaders and the powers of the day.
He did. Yeah, indeed, he did. His life teachings and example were such that it was a direct challenge to all the domination systems that were around in those days, political and religious.
Stuart,
neither of them could handle it.
I'm less worried about the gays and lesbians in the Catholic faith, because once they identify their sexuality, they are already automatically a part of a community. I'm more concerned about the, if you like, heterosexual individuals who were abused as children, who have still grown up to be suppressed by the church, and who still connect to the church as their community, and their lives have been destroyed.
Well, yes, it's very true. We here in Newcastle, and you guys there in Melbourne, are probably the two major dioceses in the whole country who have had this problem the worst. What's gone on in Melbourne and what's gone on in Newcastle has just been utterly horrendous. The abuse and then the hierarchical cover-ups, it would seem, of that abuse. What's to be done? I can only assume that Pope Francis is not a stupid man, and that he realises the gravity and the depth of this problem and the pervasiveness of this problem, because it's right across the world. There absolutely needs to be a zero tolerance of any kind of abuse whatsoever. Priests, I think, probably should be taken out of ministry permanently. They would probably need to be suggested to, you know, put into therapy, long-term therapy, to at least help them manage whatever's going on in their lives. These guys themselves, I think, are probably highly wounded individuals, and really are not fit in the strictest sense of the word, not in a moral sense, but not able to be in a position of ministering to other people when their own sense of self is so wounded that they're perpetrating these evils upon kids, and then calling some of that evil holy and righteous before God, you know, sacralising it, to use that kind of language. It's just unutterably horrible what's happened.
And the only man who knows every single case intimately has now gone into hiding forever.
Well, we haven't seen a lot of him, and we probably won't see much of former Pope Benedict. That's true. I understand they're meeting next weekend, so who knows what will happen.
Okay, well, Stuart, back to your book. You're having a launch, and we want to know why. Because I brought it ages ago.
Yes, my book came out in January last year, and it's been I've had a great run with it. It's just been such a wonderful year. I've been talking to so many people. I got a chance to appear in a documentary in New Zealand on same-sex marriage. That was absolutely wonderful. We've put that up on the Facebook page tonight for free, so people can watch the whole thing for free as of tonight, which is great. New Zealand, of course, are so far ahead of us in on that issue, and
many others as well.
And I'm a Kiwi, so I'm very proud of them.
Including their indigenous and population and treatment.
Yes, to that.
So I just got so busy with what was going on last year with the book. I got very, very busy also with my own family. My dad had passed away the Christmas day before, so we just had his first anniversary, and I was taking a lot of care of my mother and just making sure she was okay. She was sort of 84 years of age at the time. I was still running my psychology practice and was, fairly booked out. So it was a really, really big time for me. And the real truth is, we just never got around to having a lawn. there's no great profound reason why we're doing this now.
So when is it and where is it? And can anyone turn up?
Oh, absolutely. Look, it's here in Newcastle. So come and have a nice Novocastrian visit. It's a great city. It really is. It's on the 26th of April next month at Adamstown Uniting Church. The minister there is a gay guy, and he's new to the area, and he's read my book and just really, really supportive in what I've been doing, and he wants to show his appreciation for the effort, I guess, that I put into writing the book, which is the way he's talking. And so we're having this kind of launch/celebration/appreciation, complete with wine, cheese and finger food, on the 26th of April at Adamstown Uniting Church.
That sounds fabulous, Stuart.
So if anybody wants to wing their way up, you're very, very welcome.
You can all stay at Stuart's place. The book, Being Gay, Being Christian, found at all good bookstores.
That's right, yes.
Stuart Edser, thank you very much for joining us on the Spirit Lounge this evening.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure, always.
Joy 94.9.
Hello, I am Amanda Palmer, and you're listening to Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only lesbian and gay community radio station.
You are on Joy 94.9 in the Spirit Lounge, and oh yes.
Not that sort of spirit. Ice clinking.
Oh, well, we've had a good night tonight.
Well, thank you, Dean.
I've enjoyed getting fired up. It's been good.
Well, thank you to Andrew Marin and to Stuart Edser. And it's goodbye from the priest.
And the pornographer.
And the poof.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.